Welcome to The Local, brought to you by Fairhaven Wealth Management in partnership with our friends at the Wheaton Chamber of Commerce here in Wheaton, Illinois. I'm Mark Horner, and together with Vicki Austin, we bring you conversations about what's happening with people right around you.
Everyone has a story that goes well beyond their day-to-day life. Stories about their history, their passion, their inspirations.
All you have to do is look and ask and maybe listen.
These stories may be local, but their reach is far and their themes universal.
Welcome to The Local. Today we've got Tony Payne from Wheaton College and the director of the Artist Series joining us today to talk all things music. Thanks for being here, Tony.
Thank you. I've already had fun just walking in the building. I can't believe that I've never been here and seen this beautiful place.
I know. Isn't the art amazing?
Oh, it's beautiful. And the fact is it seems like it tells a story, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah.
These are massive compliments.
Yeah, well, you can take them with a sincere heart.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Before we get started, I do need to confess. Mm-hmm. I am a graduate of North Park College. So in the same athletic conference as Wheaton, I played college basketball a long time ago.
Imagine that.
And so the combination of competitiveness that dies a slow death and just my natural immaturity, I might have some problems being really profuse in my support of Wheaton College. So if you pick up on any of that, that's where it's coming from. Please look past it.
I won't take it personally.
Thank you. No.
Yes,
thank you.
And I have great fondness for your alma mater.
Thank you very much. I wish I could say the same.
Yeah.
But thank you. So the pandemic, I have to believe has been a challenge in particular for the performing arts. How are things doing, coming along as we're coming out of that?
Thank you for asking, and thank you for including me in this conversation. I'm really grateful and humbled that you would think I had something to share. So here goes. With regard to the pandemic of the performing arts, it's been a serious matter. You had places like Chicago Symphony Hall and the Lyric Opera that were requiring proof of vaccination in order to get into the performance. Everyone had their variation of how they were coping, and we are now in a place where I call it the massive pivot. There's just a massive pivot because so many things have changed. It's almost as if what we knew before we don't know anymore. And so now how that plays out is revenue and attendance, bodies and seats.
Yeah.
And so people are not accustomed. They don't have the muscle memory to come to a performing arts event. And some don't have the discernment to say that being here live in this extraordinary space far outweighs a live stream or a recorded YouTube or whatever.
Absolutely.
And there really is, there's a kind of I hate to call it laziness, but a complacency maybe, where if we had true confessions in this circle, we might say, if you have a choice between going out in February to a concert in some concert hall, however beautiful, or to be home in your pajamas watching it on your 70-inch live screen TV, guess what? There's a real thing there. This is such a reality that for us, we've been just implementing a new ticketing software system. We needed something that was not only state of the art, but we needed something that was more for the times.
Yeah.
And so one of the facets that I insisted on when we chose Spectrix out of 80 other contenders is I said, we have to be able to monetize live streaming.
Yeah.
That sets up a whole another set of problems, which has to do with permissions and legalities. Mm-hmm. You can't just assume that because somebody is there getting paid to play music, that music can be broadcast legally. So we're constantly struggling with that because it's almost as if you have to hire a new person to handle the legalities of it.
Ugh.
We are going to get through it, though, and hopefully it'll be a matter of, I would say, both and. You know, that for example, a person at the local retirement community who maybe doesn't feel well or it's too dark and they're afraid to go out, I want them to be free to do the live stream and feel good about it.
That's wonderful.
Of course, the other thing you work with there is with the live streaming is that people don't think that costs as much as coming to a concert. So $45 for a concert ticket, but they want to pay $5 for the live stream.
Or free.
Or free. Well, and there were so many free things online. And I credit that to the performing arts community, who was so generous that they would either give it free or they would do it as a benefit to someone else besides themselves. I know a friend in New York whose wife is a professional violinist, and they had these concerts, and they did it simply to raise money for people in the performing arts who literally didn't have a dime coming in.
Right.
Their income went to zero. We have the blessing, you know, I do, of getting a paycheck at Wheaton College. Thank you, God. But so many people had a year and even two where things were upside down. So that's, I would say that our big challenge with the Wheaton College Artist Series, we're in our 73rd year this year. 73 or 72? 1950 is what we count as our first year.
I was told there would be no math. Yes.
Well, then we'll say some years ago.
Solidly so, in the 70s.
Yes, right. And so here we are trying to reawaken that intention of coming to events and hearing live musicians. We have a beautiful new concert hall with 650 seats. We have Edmund Chapel with 2,357 seats. And right now, I think you'd have to have, I'm trying to think what would attract anyone to fill Edmund Chapel. It would be something really extraordinary, and it probably wouldn't be out of the classical aesthetic. So I was just
imagining that the classical aesthetic is likely the majority of the styles of music that have been presented in the artist series over time. Is that true?
Yes, the majority.
The majority.
We've had some really special things to highlight over those decades. I have a list of every artist that's ever performed. And so we've had a lot of folk dance companies that bring in another cultural experience. And I've very much liked that. We were talking about bagpipes and the two or three examples that we had of bagpipe bands with wind bands accompanying and marching on the Edmund Chapel stage. That was a wonderful, wonderful experience. We have had some unusual mashups, like Marvin Hamlisch before he passed away. Marvin Hamlisch, Joel Gray, the Wheaton College Choirs and Orchestra.
Wow.
And Marvin Hamlisch was a hoot. He just was a funny guy, and the kids kind of thought, oh, here's just this guy that just does movie music. And he started rearranging the music on the score. He would say, now the sopranos, it says to do this, don't do that. And oboe, don't play that note unless I signal for you to play it. And he would, suddenly the posture changed, and the students realized we had better take Marvin Hamlisch more seriously.
Right.
So for those of us in the audience, myself at the head of this list, I unfortunately don't know who Marvin Hamlisch is.
Okay.
So could you give me a couple of
he's a film composer.
Okay.
And he did several of the, well, he wrote
Did he do The Way We Were?
And
he wrote with Carol Bayer Sager.
I'd have to cheat and look online, but some Streisand films.
Yeah, a lot of
right?
Streisand films, yeah.
And what's the Broadway movie? Chorus Line?
Chorus Line.
Is that his? Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Da 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 dum, ba da 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 dum, ba dum. And so Marvin was a truly remarkable man, and he had a tragic death, but he came and he made his way in the relationship. He looked at a liturgical banner in Edmund Chapel that was clearly Christian. And he said to the students, he said, you know, I'm a Jew. And he said, I look up and I see this banner that says, the one you crucified.
Oh, geez.
everybody just had a roar with that one because he was willing to laugh with them about
it. And to be open about it.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, we can't go past the bagpiper thing without me
making sure
you know that our host, Mark Horner, is a bagpiper.
Yes.
Did you know that?
Actually, what he told me before you came into the room, that of the bagpipers that exist, he's one of them.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. That is true.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he played for us at a Wheaton Chamber luncheon on March 17th.
I've already tried to hire him for a gig.
Oh, good. Okay, and, good. Just wanted you to know.
He said he has a list of friends.
He comes full with the kilt, the whole
schmear. We got bogged down in contract negotiations.
Oh, okay.
It's those attorneys. They ruin all the fun.
Your people talk to my people.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, indeed.
And my agent call your agent.
Yeah. But when we were talking about the bagpipes, I related that I had seen and I believe it was the Black Watch, and with accompanied by a brass band at one of the Artist Series performances. I think that's a number of years ago.
Was that the Black Watch with the Welsh Guards, maybe?
I think you're right. I think that is. So the idea of kind of kickstarting the live performance world, this notion of maybe adding, what I'm hearing is this notion of adding more diversity of styles and genres is something that you're actively working on to try and cast a wider net.
I have been I'm an eclectic. Don't tell anyone, but I'm an eclectic. And so I love all music. I love different types of music. I'm very interested in rap, even though I don't largely understand it. I love black gospel music, but I'm not a master of it, but I can play some of it on the keyboard. That's my instrument. And I really do love the fact that people express their lives, their stories, their hearts, their interests through the music that's dear to them. The Wycliffe Bible Translators refers to that as the heart music.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is your heart music, Vicki?
Oh, I have so many. Methodist hymns, of course, that I grew up hearing. Rock and roll, really country. I'm kind of a country girl.
You too?
Yeah,
me too.
How about you, Mark?
Oh, well, this conversation is reminding me of the first time on the bagpipes that I produced a tune that I recognized.
And it gave me
goosebumps
to hear that
music. So talking about the pandemic and the challenges there, we unfortunately lost my mom to brain cancer at the beginning of the pandemic.
God rest your soul.
Thank you. That was a time when, so even memorial services were not allowed.
Right.
And so the church that she and dad attended allowed me to come out to Boston and play a bagpipe tune in her memory. So I'd say, sorry to make this all about bagpipes, but there's a fair amount of personal connectivity to that. And then
so moving, such a moving sound.
It is for a little while.
And far away.
For a little while. I think, I have been at performances in the bagpipe band where you can see that we've stayed a bit too long and the crowd is ready for them to be over.
I can't believe that.
Yeah,
I'm
no,
sorry.
It happens,
I can't
Vicki.
Believe that.
It does. It does.
It happens with almost all music, though, to be fair. I tell our students and our guest artists, really 60 to 75 minutes, I'm happy to be home and remember with fondness everything I heard and they shared. There are people who really just can't let go, and they'll play and then they'll have one person applauding in the audience and they'll find that as a reason for an encore.
Wrong.
The hook. Yes. Yeah. Give them the hook.
No, what I love about the bagpipe is the solemnity. I know that the folk tunes are very important to the memory of, certain tribes and nations.
Right. Right.
But the solemnity, especially at a funeral, I just find to be really powerful.
Remarkably moving. Yeah.
Just amazing grace. And you can kind of think, oh, I've never heard anything better. So
I have a Tony Payne story that I'd like to share. Years ago, a friend of mine passed away, and Tony was the organist at my friend's church, our mutual friend, but I think you knew him through church. I knew him as a client and later as a friend. His name was Rob Odell. And the soloist that they had selected for the service was unable to get through the song because of her breaking down and her grief over the loss of her friend. And Tony at the piano played the introduction again, and she tried again and she still couldn't get through the song. And then Tony started singing. And the power of his voice carried her back into the song, and they got through it together. And I will never forget that.
That's so sweet of you to think of that.
Wow. Wow. So you finished as a duet. She joined you.
You just have certain, certain impulses at a moment like that.
Yeah.
And had another one, the funeral of former president of Wheaton College, Hudson T. Armerding. We were at College Church, and I wasn't playing. I wasn't doing anything except attending because I loved the man. But suddenly the pianist who was playing, his daughter, the music started to go flying. And so I just impulsively went up and collected the music and put it in place and held it in place for her. So now here, these many years since, I see her and she remembers me picking up the music for her.
Such
and
how, a kindness.
Yeah, it is really funny how.
It was those two false starts, too. It was like at a rehearsal where, started and started again. And then it was as if you carried her, picked her up and carried her. And it was just,
it was a tender time.
It was
that
a very
was
tender,
a tender time.
Yeah.
The interest in live performance of music is that, are you seeing in students studying music, are you seeing a drop off in interest there?
That's a really good question. I think that everybody is sitting on the edge of their seats across the university and college settings of America. And they're thinking that things have changed in higher education like they have in the local church, that it's not the sense of obligation that you once had if you can watch it on TV and not get out of bed. With the undergraduates or the graduate population, but I'll specifically refer to the undergraduate population, it is a very serious matter. And we have to work doubly hard to communicate the values, because you've got a lot of competitors in the field. You've got a lot of colleges that I'll say they discount, and they'll charge one person full price so that they can discount another one.
Right.
And that's all pretty much common practice.
Right.
We've tried to not use that kind of method and rather have endowed scholarships as a way to keep the integrity of the fund pool, steady. But the actual thing is, people are reconsidering the value, the cost, the prospect of indebtedness. They're thinking about what they might do instead, or whether they would take 2 years at the community college. I don't think there's one size fits all, but I can tell you, after nearly 40 years in higher education, I feel as strongly about the value as I ever did. It's not always in the classroom that you reap those values. Sometimes it's in other places in the campus. Sometimes it's in those conversations that are unexpected, or when a student is struggling with a health issue or some kind of private matter that they need help getting through. So I really believe in that, and I think that schools like yours and mine, I'll put it that way.
Thank you. Thank you.
Your very alma mater and mine.
Very diplomatic.
Extending the olive branch.
Exactly.
Yes,
they
thank
do.
You.
I think that they excel at those things. There are a lot of complicated issues today, but we have to believe what we believe, what our conscience tells us to believe, and we have to follow it with integrity. So then you take it another step and you say, okay, now let's say we have this common base of faith, but we still have a question of, what am I going to do with this piano major? What am I going to do with 4 years of studying the piano and playing largely Chopin and Brahms and Beethoven? Those are legitimate questions, and we can't even answer them for the student. Often I'll have parents that will ask me, what is my son or daughter going to do with a degree in voice? And they want some kind of guarantee,
right?
ROI.
Right.
Yes.
Get the return on investment.
And I respectfully say to them, what are they going to do with a business degree? What are they going to do with a literature degree? Mm-hmm. There's no promissory in any of it. It's the student making real the experience that they've had. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think that the student becomes the ambassador for the institution much more than the reverse.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've often encouraged people to reach out to their alma mater because I tell them, you are the product. You're the, and I don't mean to, you know, dehumanize them, but they are the result of what the school has done. So, yeah, and Wheaton College has such a wonderful reputation, especially in the arts and the conservatory and music. So you all are seen as, you know, a sort of set above.
Well, thank you. I really want to honor President Phil Ryken about that. He has been there now a good number of years. The years flow, so I don't even say anymore what year was that. Mm-hmm. But he came with an a priori commitment to the arts. You know, when he pastored in Philadelphia, he was a subscriber to the Philadelphia Orchestra, and his church had a great musical tradition. So when he came, his commitment was a priori. And that set the stage then for the college to make the decisions they did about the Arts Center. Now, we had a lot of plans. We knew we needed to replace the functionality of McAllister Conservatory, which was built in the early 60s. And we finally landed on the idea that we could take that old science building and pivot it, repurpose it into a music building. And I was skeptical from the very beginning. I thought, what a terrible idea.
Why?
Because I didn't want something old that used to be a cadaver lab as my office or whatever, you know.
Good reason.
That seems reasonable.
And I've since repented of all of that. So when you think about in the times that we live in the last 10 to 15 years, the college has spent in excess of $70 million. When you think about the art gallery in the old Adams Hall, mm-hmm. which was the first basketball court in DuPage County. Did you know that?
I did not know
that.
Yeah,
second floor. There's still some of the wood of the original flooring.
Don't tell him
floor.
He will take it and make a room out
yeah,
of
exactly.
it.
That's true.
Like
yeah,
the bowling alley room.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was our first effort. The second one was to make an addition to the north side of Edmund Chapel so that there's backstage area and so that we could host the likes of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. You know, there were times when we had orchestras come to campus to play on the artist series, and they would bring their trunks and put them in the grass outside the building. That was how desperate we were for room. Now we have an actual gathering space where the CSO can get situated and unpack their instruments and all the rest. And so that was the next, that was about a $6 million investment alone. And then we repurposed the science building, and then we built the concert hall. And the concert hall opened right in the dead of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And so there we were with a beautiful concert hall, and the campus was essentially closed mm-hmm. because we were trying, our first job was to protect the health of the students.
Of course.
So, in fact, I worked at home for well over a year. It was a tough time, but all of this came to fruition. And what I really want, you know, the various places where you and I serve together, I want people to have a sense of ownership.
Yes.
My boss, Dean Michael Wilder, will say to people from the community, he'll say, this is your facility. Mm-hmm. He doesn't clutch at it as if to say it's only the domain of Wheaton College. You know, we work with Stevens and Tate and for advertising and promotion. And Dan Gartland said as a Catholic kid, he lived in the neighborhood. He'd ride his bike around the campus because he didn't know if he was, you know, if it was okay to ride through the campus.
Right, right.
Yeah. So that what we're intending it to be is a true arts center for the community. And when you look at the fact that there is no concert hall, you've got the Mac, you've got now our concert hall, and you've got Wentz. Psychological distance between Wheaton College and COD is much greater than the real distance, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yes, yes.
And the focus of the Mac is more towards the theatrical. It is more in concept a theater that gets used at times as a concert hall, but a lot more of amplification and that sort of thing. Whereas we're saying we spent millions on these acoustics, Threshold Acoustics in Chicago, this wonderful firm. We spent millions on acoustics. We don't want to complicate it with amplification that we don't need.
Right. Tony, would you back up a little bit and tell us about the Armerding Center? So as you're speaking about the concert hall, you're talking about the brand new, newly opened, as you said, during the pandemic, but now open and hosting the artist series, the Armerding Center. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah. So for several decades, we were really promoting the idea that we needed a new facility for music, and that the McAllister Conservatory was just undersized, underpowered for the kind of functionality that our program really required and that our reputation for excellence earned. So we were looking at all sorts of solutions. We hired an architect from Los Angeles because we admired his work so much. It was truly special. But we quickly discovered that their concept was going to be $30 or $40 million over what the college had what the college trustees had stipulated. So we just had to pivot there too, and we found Midwestern firms that understood that Midwestern economy of means, and they brought it in at $63 million. Now, what is it? It's a Conservatory of Music building, a building that serves all the musicians of the campus, not just the music majors. We have a gospel choir. We have students that are hobbyists. We have a worship band that plays for chapel. So the main building, the former science building, has all of those components in it, and my office, which is, I'm sure, going to be a historic place someday.
Yes, we're working on that brass plaque right now.
And then to attach the new concert hall, it was really quite a feat. They brought in a crane that had to be able to lift 500 tons. And they installed concrete slabs that were like Lego pieces. No, they were tongue and groove, basically. So the concrete slabs, they...
Vertically,
65 feet in the air, they attached to each other. And then they just put like caulking in between them or something. But they discovered that that was the most economical way that they could make that building the size that it needed to be for acoustical headspace. And so we built that concert hall with acoustics as job one. And then I'll tell you a little story about that. So the science lecture hall and the concert hall, we're going to be just this one straight line, you know, just straight line. There's probably a theological interpretation in there somewhere. And I said, couldn't we just have the concert hall just off a little bit? And would you believe that Bruce Konigsberg responded to that and he gave us 15 degrees so that here's the science building turned into a music building. And there were our 15 degrees for the concert hall. And my reason was that I wanted to be able to come out of this lobby and look out and see parking and see where you were. It's wayfinding.
Sure.
So that's my contribution, is I'm off, but not that far.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
15 degrees, Tony. So where can we get, where can people stay up to date about concerts coming up and performances that they should not be missing? Which, by the way, I don't know how anybody can listen to some of the stories that we've all shared about the power of in-person music and bet against the comeback of in-person music performance. But where do we get information about upcoming performances?
Our brand spanking new ticket program. It's very simple. Tickets.wheaton.edu. Tickets.wheaton.edu. And there you can go and you can see all the events that are coming up. You can get it all there. And the ticket prices, we try to keep as modest as we can. The artist series is the biggest challenge because, you know, you pay a $10,000 fee to a small ensemble. It's not a lot of money by the time they pay for travel.
Right.
And get an honorarium,
right?
You know,
right.
And
they're making a living.
Yeah, they're making a living. So, and yet, you have to, on the other side, you have to say, how many tickets do we have to sell to make that work? And the only reason we can survive right now until things return to some degree of normalcy is through the generosity of our charitable donors, the businesses and corporations here in the area who are just incredibly faithful. And we're really grateful for that.
I want to thank you, Tony, for being part of our Arts, Business, and Culture Committee at the Wheaton Chamber. We've come together with all of our members who have some affiliation in the arts to come together and project all the things that everybody's doing. And thank you so much for having a seat at that table.
Well, to me, it's interesting. And it's an opportunity for us to integrate our community concerns. I say that you invest in the performing arts because you're investing in the cultural treasury of the community. And why wouldn't that pertain directly to the concerns of our businesses and corporations
Absolutely.
In the area? And so to me, it's a really interesting way to make friends and to raise these values. None of it's easy, but we're going to keep at it and try to leave a legacy that is going to make a difference in other people's lives. I think that, you know, another facet of this challenge is that there's so much digital media that's available to us, not only free, but just whether it's, you know, to think of it that I can, somebody yesterday told me about a particular artist and I can go to Apple Music and there they are, everything that they ever recorded. I mean, that's astounding. We're alive in an amazing time.
Yes.
And how do we use those resources without losing the person, you know, the personality of the performing arts experience? I don't even call it a concert. I call it experiences mm-hmm. because to me, that's what makes a series like ours interesting. I can tell you story after story of, you know, intermission conversations that were as valuable to me as the music itself.
Yes.
I mean, I worry through every piece.
That's
I
your
worry,
job.
You know, about what's going to be said or what's going to be failed at. One time at a piano concert by this crazy pianist whose name I'll just leave off the table, off the recording. And I get a message at the intermission saying, Mr. So-and-so wants to see you. And I'm thinking, oh no. And, you know, I went back and he was wanted to know about investing in property in DuPage County. It was insincere. He what he really liked was the experience that he was having, but then there were just all these little tentacles that made it complicated. I've been yelled at by people during halftime or as they go out very dramatically to say, this is the worst thing I've ever heard. And it ruins my night, I'll tell you.
Oh.
But you just try to
roll forward. Roll with the punches.
Right now I'm dealing with a cancellation. I'm not going to get into the details yet because it's not public. But, you know, an artist, if they're sick, they're sick.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They're human beings.
They are the product, too.
Yeah. One time, the great Yo-Yo Ma of all people, the cellist, they called and said, he is so sick. He has the flu. Every expression that you can imagine of what having the flu means for him. And he just can't be there. And so it was just a real, even then, 30 years ago, it was still a big deal to have Yo-Yo Ma.
Oh, it would be a crushing blow.
Yeah.
Yes. We traded glances.
You and Yo-Yo?
Yes. I am a cellist as well. And Yo-Yo was performing at Wentz Hall, mm-hmm. right? And Bonnie Wheaton, the Honorable Judge Bonnie Wheaton, invited me to go with her. She's a fellow cellist. And we were up in the choral section. Is that right? Right in back. So basically, I watched this gentleman perform for over an hour, no music. That's what's so astonishing. It's all by heart. And I think he turned around and winked at me.
I'm not surprised. He's probably one of the most articulate spokesmen for the performing arts.
He is.
You know, he says music equals music equals music.
Oh.
And so that doesn't really give us the freedom to exclude a music because it's not the one we like or to exclude a music because it's out of our cultural tradition.
Well, I'm intrigued that you like or are intrigued by rap. I'm intrigued that you're intrigued by rap. And I have to ask you, what is it about rap that intrigues you?
Oh, it's such a culturally specific art form, and it's so easy for kind of establishment people to be put off by the use of certain four-letter words or whatever, but to miss the real significance of the message that's coming from that person's experience or the experience of his community. Mm-hmm. I think it calls for compassion and grace to listen to that person and to find out, well, what does it mean when, is it Eminem, the kid from Detroit, mm-hmm. what does it mean for him to be doing this rap and to be making these expressions that we'd normally associate with the black community?
Right.
You know?
And is it appropriation?
Yeah.
Is it,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think he's his own thing, and I think he's a very potent artist on his own. But having grown up in southeastern Michigan, it's near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. Likewise, I went to the last, our daughter took us to the last performance at Ravinia of R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Aretha Franklin.
Yeah, Aretha Franklin for 100. And she sat there so frail at the piano.
Oh.
It was really touching. And yet she pulled off that song, and the audience, everybody was just alight with it. And then I started to watch her documentaries, several films about her. And you just realize, what a story.
Really?
Mahalia Jackson would be another one.
Mm-hmm.
One of our proudest moments came actually twice when the great contralto Marian Anderson performed on the artist series.
Mm.
She was a woman who was invited to perform for the Daughters of the American Revolution at Washington, at the Lincoln Memorial. And they disinvited her because she was black and it was turning into a big kerfuffle. And Eleanor Roosevelt is said to have threatened that, she said, if you do not let Marian Anderson perform at this occasion, then I will renounce my membership. I'll withdraw my membership from the DAR.
Whoa.
Yeah, so Marian Anderson was a iconic and a truly great artist. And she was just one of many that we brought who had unique stories and varying ethnic and national traditions that they represented. So many of the early years of the artist series were Russian emigres who were mm-hmm. Jews who mm-hmm. had come out of Europe looking for safety. And so a lot of the great names that we know, the violinists, Isaac Stern and the like, they were people who had fled for some reason of safety or well-being.
Yeah.
Your story of seeing Aretha Franklin with your daughter, what an experience to use your description of what you think about the performance. I don't know that gets replicated sitting in front of a television.
I didn't even know that night how important it was.
Yeah. Hmm.
And then I realized that what it took for that, for the producer up at Ravinia to get her there, I'll bet it took a lot.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, you're challenged with a lot of those artists that are iconic. People say, well, can't we have the big named artists like the past? And in the classical genre, you have to say, well, who would those be? And I would say that to you. Do you know any classical artists that are sure sells who you can afford to? Yo-Yo Ma's fee is now around $165,000 for one concert. Lang Lang, the Chinese pianist, his fee is like $200 or $210.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
Bagpipers are much cheaper.
Yeah, I know.
You could get one for
much cheaper.
Are you
cheaper
telling
here.
Me you'd reconsider performing for that gig I have
for substantially less than $165?
Yeah.
You mentioned something that I think is really important to business owners, and that's intellectual property. Mm-hmm. I've found that at the chamber, sometimes the newer business owners don't understand the value of that. And you said, you know, when you're hiring musicians, you know, you've got to pay for them. There's a value connected with that, not only the person themselves, but the rights to their music. Can you speak a little bit about that in terms of what you see for the economy of music, economics of music going forward?
I'm not an expert in the field, but I can say that it is a major concern because there's so much in play all the time. And so you've got the Apple Music and you've got Spotify and all that sort of thing. And yet the artists are getting pennies on the dollar. You know, that's a real thing. It's also true that a lot of people are trying to do what's right and get the correct permissions. But honestly, you'd have to hire a lawyer full time to sort it all out. We get to a certain point where we just can't afford the time to figure out who owns it. Mm-hmm. And you'll have jazz tunes. A couple of years ago, we had a wonderful jazz artist, and he played an arrangement of some iconic tune by Duke Ellington or something. And guess what? I couldn't even put it on the recording, the archive, because his arrangement, who knows, maybe even it wasn't legal. We don't know at times. So we just exercise great caution with that. I would say respect it. Don't be flippant about it. And then find the best intellectual property person locally that would have concern, that would want the well-being of the community to be protected. And I would say for us, we're going to move forward and take any opportunity that we can to archive, to kind of classic artist series moments. But it's going to tend to be more piece by piece than it is going to be something that you just put the whole concert up for a viewer or a listener. The other funny thing with classical music is, so you'll have a Beethoven sonata. And if you have the so-called urtext version, that's like the original notes that Beethoven wrote without any editing of forte or piano or fast or slow. And that is probably free of any encumbrance of permissions. You probably can do it and call it in the public domain. But if you use a particular edition, the edition may be copyrighted, even though the work isn't. And so those Fs and Ps and those crescendos and those are part of a copyright for which we have to have permission. So it is really, it's a quagmire.
It's a complicated mm-hmm. business.
Tony, thank you very much for joining us. Tony, 15 degrees pain. So tickets.wheaton.edu to check out the upcoming schedule. And I will look forward to attending, being a supporter again of the in-person performance of the artists. It's fantastic.
Well, you're so kind to engage with me about things that are so near and dear to my heart. So thank you for inviting me. And I thank you for letting me see this beautiful place. I don't think I've seen an office that's prettier than this one.
But thank you very
much. And I don't
much.
Even golf.
You are welcome anytime.
No one
anytime.
Will teach me.
You are welcome anytime.
All right.
Anytime.
I'll come over and they'll say, would you like coffee or water? You know, they don't do that in my office.
Well, that's it. Another episode of The Local in the Can. Thanks for joining us. If you have any story ideas or comments, drop us a note at fairhavenwealth.com. And be sure to subscribe, review, and rate us on your favorite platform. I'm Mark Horner, and I hope you'll join us next time when we cut another episode of The Local.